Okay, House Transportation Committee on March 19th at 1:03 p.m. Has been called to order, and let the record show that Representative Johnson, Representative Lynn, Representative Feige, Representative Christ Tompkins, Representative Isaacson, and myself, Representative Wilson, are present, and we have a quorum. And I'd like to recognize our staff today. On my right is Nancy Hemingway, House Recording Secretary. And on my left is Alex Judashaw, who is our LIO monitor. Did I say it right?
Close.
Oh, darn. Judashaw, yes. Okay, before we start, oh, my committee aide is Representative Becky Rooney. And before we get going, I'm doing it so fast. Before we get going, please turn off your cell phones all the way off. And today we have two bills on the agenda, House Bill 146, Proof of Motor Vehicle Insurance, and then we shall bring up House Bill 123, then the Enabling Statutes for the Alaska Transportation Infrastructure Bill that we heard 2 weeks ago. So we have a CS for House Bill 146, designated version N. Do I have a motion to bring this version before us?
I move. If I can borrow your language, I move that we have a that CS. The committee adopt CS for HB 146, designated version N.
Okay. Hearing no objections, we now have House Bill 146 version N before us, and Mr. Thomas, staff to Representative Higgins, and Representative Higgins, would you come forward and state your name and introduce your bill using the N version?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Pete Higgins, representative for District 5 out of Fairbanks. And pretty much today, I know you guys have my sponsor statement, but it's pretty straightforward, Bill. If you know me, I'm a dentist. I grew up in Alaska, and one of the things that drives me crazy is that Alaska's always behind the power curve, one form or another. Well, I'm trying to bring us forward into the 21st century. And this is this bill here basically has to do with proof of insurance. And I don't know about any of you, but I've been stopped before, and I've grabbed my insurance card, and guess what? It's been expired. My fault, on my own, I know that. But with modern technology, we have apps now that basically say, hey, here's your insurance. And in fact, here's my app.
His phone's not off, Madam Chair. There you go.
We now have proof of insurance. So this bill is to help all those people that we can do this with. And it's basically all it's saying is that we can now show proof of insurance with your mobile apps or electronic devices. So like I said, it's pretty straightforward. There's no fiscal note to it. We're just bringing ourselves into the 21st century. It's about time we should do this. And I'm sorry for my kind of going through this kind of quickly, but I'm supposed to go to another committee. So I'm going to turn over the time and any questions to my chief of staff, Tom Sudler, and if you have any questions for me, though, I'll be willing to take them real quick.
Is there any app to help you find your cell phone when you need it to show your...
Yes. Tom says there is one.
Yes, sir. It's called Find My Phone.
Find My Phone.
Go through the chair, please. Okay. Any other questions?
Thank you for your time.
Okay. Okay, Tom, if you want to proceed.
Yes, ma'am, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Thomas Studler, and I'm staff for Representative Higgins. And I'd like to talk to the committee today about HB 146, an act extending proof of motor vehicle liability insurance. Currently, there are six states already that have enacted this law, this statute, into law in their states, and it's for convenience for the motorist. There are 20 other states that are currently in the legislative process of passing legislation that would encourage this. When we researched this, we found that there are two basic types of electronics proof of insurance. One's called ALIR, which is American Liability Insurance Registry, and that's done through the insurance companies and the Department of Motor Vehicles at a cost to the state of roughly $4.7 million. The other one is through the application process, which is free to the state and incurs no cost. So we thought this would be the better route and the most convenient, especially for the driver, since the burden of proof should be on the driver and not on DMV or peace officers. So with that, I'd be glad to answer any questions you may have on this.
Any questions from the committee? Representative Johnson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm wondering, do we have anyone from Anchorage online to testify in the police department on this?
Yes, I have. I have someone from Anchorage with DMV, and I have Rodney Dial from Ketchikan, who is with the Alaska State Troopers.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chairman. And my question is, and I had an experience with this, and my card was outdated, and I saw that it was, so I called my insurance company, who sent me an updated card. I gave it to the policeman. He said, we're not allowed to take the phone into the car.
Well, say that again.
They were not allowed to take the phone into the car, which, you know, they take your license and everything back and do the checks on it. And he said they were not allowed to do it. So I want to clarify that. And if we need to change something that would allow them to do it, and I asked why, he said, well, they don't want us making long-distance phone calls to China. And it was kind of off the cuff, but he wouldn't take, and so what I had to do, I said, well, this is the old one. And he looked at it, this is the new one, and they're the same except the date. And he said, okay, so he took my paper card, my expired one, because all the information was there. So I just want to make sure that we're, you know, if there's a municipal ordinance or something that we may need to address in this to allow them to do that. I just want to. And I didn't see it in the actual legislation, so I'm not sure that that's a state law or a city ordinance or just
a practice.
A practice or
okay.
You know, guideline or what? So that's my question.
Representative Johnson, through the chair, I think since you have a representative from the Alaska State Troopers online, that question would be better asked of them on their policy.
Lieutenant Dial, are you online?
Yes, Madam Chair, I am online.
Have you been following our conversation?
For the record, my name is Rodney Dial. I'm a lieutenant with the Department of Public Safety stationed in Ketchikan. And I was having a hard time hearing, but it sounded as if the representative was talking about the officer being able to take a phone back to their car. Was that the question?
Yes, that was the question. And Representative Johnson, do you want to explain that a little bit further?
Yeah, and thank you. Thank you for joining us, Rodney. It was a situation where I had my insurance card, but it expired. So I was able to call my insurance company. They sent it to me over my cell phone. And the police officer said he couldn't take the phone back to his car. So he compared the old and the new and found out it was still current and took the paper one back. But he said it was, you know, I don't remember if he said a policy that they couldn't take the phones back or not. I'm wondering if that's a policy, a philosophy, a practice, or if you've ever heard of it before.
Yes, sir. Through the chair, that is certainly not a state policy. I can tell you that there are no restrictions like that for the Alaska State Troopers. We're actually fairly creative in how we try to determine whether or not somebody has insurance if they don't have a card. As a last result, of course, we'll write a correctable citation if we believe that they do, in fact, have insurance. They just don't have an updated card with them. But we've gone as far as even calling the local insurance companies in the smaller communities that we're familiar with. For example, here in Ketchikan, I know that I could call up the local State Farm office here, and they'll tell me if somebody currently has insurance. And quite honestly, that usually works better for us than a card anyway, because we realize that somebody can go down and can get a card that shows that they have coverage for 6 months or longer. However, if they stop making payments after a month, they'll still have the card, but they won't have coverage. So there's really no restrictions as far as the department is concerned as far as how we can try to be creative and determine whether or not an individual has insurance rather than just writing them a ticket.
Okay, thank you very much for clearing that up. Any other questions? Representative Johnson?
Well, and I appreciate that the state has nothing, but I'm concerned about, you know, the city of Anchorage, which over half the population of the state's there. And if they have some kind of policy, I want to do something that, if we can, and I don't know, I certainly don't want to hold this bill up, but I'd like to
to make sure, and it could have been one officer who just didn't want to take the phone back because personal liability, whatever. He just, I don't want to say he's making something up, but I want to make sure that we pass this, we're not running afoul of something, of one of the municipal policies, philosophies, or codes that would you know, cause some difficulty. So if we need to take care of that in this piece of legislation, then
Okay, we'll see if we can bear that out. And let the record show that Representative Gaddis has joined us a short time ago. And Representative Gaddis, you have a question?
With that in mind, we were just at another meeting kind of talking the same type of technology questions and comments. And I guess my comment in this regard would be that it's very possible that Anchorage or the MATSU might be grappling with the same question, and I don't know who starts first and who follows, but with the advent of technology, I think we're all in that same boat, that we are upping how we do business and how we carry on these devices. They no longer become a phone, but they're a device that we carry lots of things, our calendars and all kinds. So, you know, I can appreciate where you're going, but I can see at the same time, I think we're all grappling with how our policies change and how we deal with that.
Representative Isaacson?
Well, and thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate Representative Johnson's question. Having just been a municipal official, you know, the mayor of a small city with a police department, I can appreciate that maybe there's some issues of evidence. However, if someone voluntarily gives a police officer the evidence, or if they're stopped for any reason, you know, maybe it's a taillight, and they suspect there's something else going on, they're able to ticket for other offenses as well. So I don't see that necessarily just from the municipal side being an issue necessarily, but I often ask our police officers why they didn't do certain things, or you know, the discretionary aspect, and sometimes if we don't spell it out in state law, they're not able to do something. So this would actually clarify it for our police officers so that they would be able to accept the electronic device. So I see this as a help to them. And I don't know if Tom has anything to add to that. But
Representative Johnson.
Yeah, and Madam Chair, I love the legislation. I think it's the way we need to go. So don't. I just want to make sure that we have in there something that does enable them to do that and is prescriptive as opposed to, you know, voluntary, so that they do have that ability and they can't. So I agree that we need to do it. I just want to make sure that when we do this legislation, it gives them the ability to do that over a policy or philosophy or whatever. So that's all. I certainly want to see this pass, and I don't want to slow it down. But from personal experience, that's all I've got to deal with at this point.
I'm looking at the bill, and the wording that they've put into the bill is a person may display the proof on a mobile electronic device. So that makes it pretty plain that it's okay to show it in the state of Alaska, display it on a mobile electronic device. So I would say that that's given permission across the state for that to happen. Representative Johnson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. But I'm not sure that a person having the right to display it is the same as the police officer's requirement to accept it. And I could be going way off down a rabbit trail, but I want to make sure that we enable, through this legislation, police officers to, with some confidence, be able to do their job. So just because you can display it doesn't mean, you know, I displayed mine on my phone. He said I can't take it.
Yeah.
So I did what this bill said.
Mm-hmm. What? Be thinking of maybe a friendly amendment.
I'll try to. And I may try to. And I don't know what the intention of this is, but if we're going to try to move this today, I may try to make a step out and make a phone call to Anchorage, the mayor's office, and see if it's a policy or philosophy, and if they have anything that's counter to what they do. So I may be satisfied with this.
Why don't you go ahead and do that right away? Did Tom have you anything to add here?
Madam Chair, In my conversations with the commissioner's office for the Department of Public Safety, they were 100% behind this as a policy for the state, and that it would allow not only the troopers, but also local municipalities to do this. And when we wrote this, we thought that it was pretty clear that you have to show evidence of proof of insurance upon demand of a peace officer, and you may display that on an electronic device if you don't have the paper device with you. In my discussions with the Department Administration, and specifically the Department of Motor Vehicles, in our conversations, they thought that it was a good idea, as it reduced the confusion on what a peace officer could accept as proof of insurance. So,
let's have a brief at least.
Madam Chair.
We're back in order, and what I'd like to do is we wanted to check with various departments to make sure that they accepted our mobile device, electronic devices. So would you like to, I know Representative Johnson got an answer from the Anchorage Police Department that they do, and Representative Isaacson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I spoke to Peggy, who's the assistant to the ledge liaison with the Department of Safety, and essentially got the same answer as Representative Johnson did from the Anchorage PD, and that is if we put it in law, that's how they will comply, and they will be able to utilize it without any problem.
Okay, and Representative Johnson, would you like to make a comment here?
Yeah, I think, and I'm satisfied with it. I understand that the only time they would need to actually take anything back to their car is in the case of an accident.
Okay.
And they have a way they could write the number down if they chose not to take the phone. So I'm comfortable with the bill the way it is, and all my concerns have been, or most of my concerns.
Okay. Representative Feige, did you have a question?
No, ma'am. I'm good with the bill.
Okay. Are everyone's questions kind of answered, and do you feel comfortable with it now?
Mm-hmm.
Do I hear a motion?
Madam Chair.
Representative Isaacson.
I move that we pass out of committee House CS for House Bill number 146, version 28-LS0436/N, with the individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Yeah. All right. Hearing no objection, so moved. So your bill is passed, and we'll go to the next committee.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And we will have, what I would like to do is kind of go into, you can go.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you. And next we're going to bring up House Bill 123. We went through the sectional analysis the last time we heard this bill, and my plan is to go through a brief PowerPoint today and then address any questions from the committee. And then I would like to have the departments go through their fiscal notes followed by public testimony. I don't plan to move this bill today. And if anyone has any amendments or anything, I would like to have them to me by the end of the day tomorrow so we could do any amending of the bill on Thursday. So let's take a brief at ease while we set up the PowerPoint and sign the committee report. Brief at ease.
At this time, we're back on the record. I'm filling in for Representative Wilson. Next order of business is House Bill 123. We'll hear a presentation from the sponsor, and then like each of the departments to go through their fiscal notes. Representative Wilson.
Okay, thank you. For the record, Representative Peggy Wilson, District 33. And the transportation infrastructure, I'm going to go through this fairly quickly at the beginning because you've seen some of this before, and then we'll slow down and get into the meat of it in just a little bit. But in Alaska, we've always had a serious problem with financing transportation infrastructure. And with our MAP 21 presentation, we saw at the beginning of session, it showed a deep decline in the amount of money we have to spend on communities and local roads. Now, with our aging infrastructure, no new roads in the last 30 to 40 years. That's really pretty atrocious. We have a $20 billion backlog in transportation projects and $700 million in deferred maintenance. So we do need open new access to resources, and in order for Alaska to have access to our natural resources, we need to greatly increase the development of our transportation system. We need to depend less on the federal government and start taking responsibility for Alaska's roads, harbors, airports, and railroads into our own hands. Plain and simple, we need to plan for the future. And knowing all these issues, the House Transportation Committee, 3 years ago, we listened to DOT, grassroots organizations, and transportation organizations identifying the challenges in our geographically diverse state. We flew to remote villages to view their airports, the basic transportation in and out of their communities. We rode the urban highways to see the challenges they face with regards to safety, congestion, and deferred maintenance. We heard from AML and the Mat-Su Borough. We heard from national experts from the Conference of State Legislators. We heard from state experts. Larry Pursley put together a report and addressed the fiscal shortfalls of our long-range transportation plan. In our deliberations, we rejected the options to fix the problem by bonding, which commits future funds to pay off debt. The solution I'm going to propose is the culmination of all the hours of committee meetings, travel, and research. Our proposal has three parts. Part one, reestablish the dedication of transportation taxes and fees as part of a transportation fund that was in existence at statehood. The framers of the Alaska Constitution grandfathered two dedicated funds related to transportation. The first one was known as the Highway Fund and had to be spent on highway-related purposes. The second fund was called the Water and Harbor Facilities Fund. The fund had to be spent on water and harbor facilities. With ATIF, we've put these two funds into one, and I will refer to ATIF, but that's the Alaska Transportation Infrastructure Fund. This will combine a vote, will combine the two funds into one, and requires a vote of the people to change the Constitution, ensuring all fees and taxes paid for transportation activities will be spent only on transportation. The second part of the proposal is we must continue to fund transportation as we have in the past. This is key to making real progress in improving our transportation infrastructure. This is one way we can slowly chink away at the $20 billion backlog of projects. The third part of the solution is to do more 100% state-funded projects. We need to take advantage of both the cost and time savings of state-funded projects without the federal strings. In the construction, an example of this is in the construction of the Elmore Road Extension in Anchorage, which was completed in less than 3 years as compared to the 7 to 10 years if the federal processes had been followed. The intention is to provide a dedicated revenue stream that will allow more projects to be completed faster and at a lower cost in addition to our ongoing federal and state projects. Legally, to implement ATIF, the legislature will have to pass three pieces of legislation. The first piece is House Joint Resolution 10 that we've passed out of this committee already, and that will put a change to the Constitution on the ballot so the people of the state can decide to implement the transportation fund. The second piece is this bill that I'm going to go into today more, House Bill 123, and it defines the laws to manage the fund. And the third piece is House Bill 122, which puts $2 billion into the fund for startup. Now, if we'll kind of slow down a little bit here. So now you ask yourself, how can we fund ATIF? Well, we will need $2 billion to seed ATIF. I know that's a sizable chunk of money, but if we don't get this much, it will be difficult to make much progress clearing off our backlog. We considered larger amounts, but decided the smaller fund, together with the continued funding of our operational budget and our capital budget, would make very steady, measurable progress against our backlog. I have heard anecdotally that a federal dollar is worth 75 cents as compared to our state dollars. I can't stress enough how important all three elements of the solution are. Annually, the revenue from the list that you see on this slide will go into the fund. This is approximately $80 million a year. One thing to note, any special use fees have been preserved. Things like vanity license plate fees and airport lease revenues, all the things that now go into certain areas, we didn't want to touch that. You can see the actual amounts from each of these taxes or fees on a spreadsheet that we will be showing you a little bit later. Is that the next one? Okay, and you have the spreadsheet in your packet. And okay, now we have a fund. How shall we manage it? And how much will be available each year to improve our transportation infrastructure? The Department of Revenue will manage ATIF consistent with a 6% of market value payoff. Now, that can be less than that. It can be a 5% averaged over the previous 5 years, depending on what we think the economy can handle at the time. They manage many funds, and they have experience and a good track record. All the profits will be reinvested into the fund each year. Each year, there will be funds available for appropriation. It will be the sum of 5% of the market value average, like I said again, over the previous 5 years, plus half of the taxes and fees collected from the previous year. Also coming out of the fund will be the expenses of the Department of Motor Vehicles, the expenses to administer and manage the fund, and also the cost for the advisory council. The fund will be self-sufficient and will not require general funds for administration, and DMV will be funded from the fund itself. The appropriations will follow the regular budgetary process and will be approved by both the governor and the legislature. We have a fund, and it's being funded annually by revenues added to the large dedicated fund. Who will get to decide which projects gets funded? It's a two-process, two-step panel. Alaska Transportation Panel. This panel recommends whether a project should be funded through the existing DOT State Transportation Improvement Plan, or the STIP, that leverages federal funds that comes with strings, or to whether it's to be considered for construction with ATIF money using state standards and procedures. The panel has 7 members, 5 public members, 1 member from Anchorage area, including Matt Sue, 1 member from Greater Fairbanks area, 1 member from Rural Coastal Community, and 1 member from a Rural Interior Community, and 1 public member from the Alaska Infrastructure Commission itself. The DOT commissioner and a member of the department's internal STIP board. The governor appoints the members, and it is his responsibility to ensure that the members are experts in all modes of transportation on the panel. So we're going to try to make sure that we have the various ferry system expert, the various road system that knows that real well, the various aviation with the airports and whatnot. And that's all spelled out in the bill itself. They will use guidelines developed by the department to analyze all projects and submitted, and all the modes, and it's submitted by the STIP projects to DOT. ATIF projects go to the commission. So they'll divide the projects, and we'll tell which ones go to the STIP process and which ones go to the ATIF process. The Alaska Infrastructure Commission, or AIC, will prioritize the projects recommended by the ATP based solely on statewide priorities and need. And this has 9 board members, 2 non-voting members, which would be the House and Senate Transportation Chairs, the DOT Commissioner, four public members, one from each judicial district appointed by the governor, two public members at large, and each member shall have experience in one or more modes of transportation. Members of both boards serve staggered four-year terms, and DOT will be charged with writing the weighted criteria that will be used for project evaluation. The AIC's prioritized list is due to the governor and the legislature by October 15th of each year for inclusion into the capital budget. All modes of transportation are considered every year. Anyone can submit a project for consideration. The state can, a borough can, an unorganized borough, a municipality, a community, or a village. We envision there will be submission forms and they will need to be filled out completely so that the commission will have all the necessary information to prioritize the projects statewide. Every project will be considered. A project that is constrained to use the federal processes can use no more than 20% of the funds available from ATIF. This is to incentivize more state-funded projects. No money shall be used for federal match for surface transportation, aviation, or the ferry system. We want major projects in these areas to be 100% state-funded. In your package, you have a spreadsheet that illustrates what Alaska can see if we fund ATIF with $2 billion and have the transportation user fees deposited into the account. The first year...
We don't have a slide.
Oh, okay. So I guess, I'm sorry. It's in your packet, the slide. So what can we expect from ATIF? The fund will help Alaska plan for its future. We'll be able to work down the $20 billion backlog, and it will help us get rid of the deferred maintenance list. ATIF will decrease Alaska's dependence on federal dollars. We'll still want to leverage every federal dollar we can, but ATIF will allow us to do more state-funded projects as well. ATIF will provide more direct jobs, and there will be an indirect employment boost as well. Our major roads are not safe due to congestion and deterioration. ATIF will help improve safety on our roads, bridges, airports, and harbors. There are numerous studies that show transportation investment creates a competitive environment, attracting additional economic investment that includes increased output, increased productivity, increased income, increased property values, increased employment, and an increase in real wages. We'll see a reduction in costs of production, reductions in non-commercial travel time, and improved quality of life, and a rate of return equal to or greater than the social costs of capital. Our state's economy is highly dependent on our resource extraction, and these industries are transportation intensive. Alaska needs a state-funded transportation system that is sufficiently and predictably funded. This reliable flow of funds allows the development and implementation of a sound transportation plan that doesn't fluctuate with funding or the economy. And I think that's really important for us to realize in the atmosphere and the economy that we find ourselves now in. It doesn't matter what the economy is. We still have to maintain our roads. We still have to try to strive and move forward so that we can actually diversify our economy. So I think I've defined our looming transportation challenges. I think that we know that there's declining funds at the state level. And ATIF is about a broader social good and economic process of the state, about meeting our ever-growing transportation needs of Alaskans. We need to implement the Alaska Transportation Fund. Alaska needs to take action now while the price of oil is still high. The permanent fund recently topped $40 billion. We fully repaid the constitutional budget reserve, and we've set aside billions more in the statutory budget reserve. I know this sounds like an expenditure, but it is really an investment in our economic future. put the constitutional amendment on the ballot in November in 2014. We need to move our three pieces of legislation, and House Bill 123 is just one of those. So we need to let the people of the state decide. And if you look at the at your what do you call this?
Spreadsheet.
Our spreadsheet. There you go. If you look at the spreadsheet, it shows how much the how much we begin the balance with, and the first year, because it wouldn't be a full year, it wouldn't be as much. The total capital for appropriations would be $68 million, and over the period of time, as the fund grows, we would end up with $300 million every year. So the fund will slowly grow, the principal will grow every year, and more money that we can put into the transportation projects across the state will grow. So if you have any questions,
questions for the sponsor.
Actually, I do.
You do?
Yeah.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson. I do not support this, but on the makeup of the seven-member transportation panel.
Yes.
You have one from Anchorage, one from Fairbanks, one from Rural Interior, and one from Rural Coastal. You could actually be excluding Southeast.
Yes, we could.
And is that something you want to do?
I really don't want to, but that group there is going to be the group that decides on whether it goes into the ATIF plan or whether it goes into the STIP plan. And it's the nine-member committee that will decide the projects across the state and rate them in order of importance and need.
If you're comfortable, I'm comfortable. Any other questions for the sponsor? We do have Tiffany Thomas from Anchorage DMV online for questions. Well, thank you, Representative.
And if the committee has no more questions, I would like the departments to go over each one of them to be able to go over their fiscal notes and explain those.
Thank you, Representative Wilson. I guess we'll take each department in turn. DOT might as well lead the pack.
So, are you ready? I certainly am. Jeff Otteson, Director of Program Development at Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. We prepared a fiscal note for HB 123 that shows about $490,000 in the first year, dropping back to about $209,000 on an annual basis after that. The one-time costs in the first year consisted of the purchase of a suite of software to help manage this whole scoring process, and along with that, $50,000 for legal costs in promulgating regulations. And then after that, it's essentially personal services, travel for the commissions, and other lesser expenses for that one staff person that would be chair, or not chair, but staff to both commissions.
Okay, and I have a question. My question is, what does STIP use now with their software as a, you know, you wanted to get new software? Is that in the plan process anyway or what?
We last year, when we did a fiscal note on a very similar bill, we had assumed we would be buying this decision-making software at that time. We don't at the moment have a what I call a sophisticated piece of software for managing STIP projects. We basically use an Excel spreadsheet. We only do about 30 or 40 projects in the STIP scoring process, That takes us 2 days. It's a slow slog because you're going through six members and 12 or 13 questions and going around the room and recording votes for each question and having a staff person and all that. We believe, and one of the things the STIP does that's different than this bill is the STIP has a way to separate the highest sort of caliber projects from others. We basically pre-score with staff, and only a subset of projects come to the full STIP panel. If we didn't do that, we would have to have that full STIP panel score 300 or 400 projects, and not in 2 days, it might be 10 days. We just can't do that. That's 10 days of staff time and of high-ranking executives in the department. And I can tell you, having gone through many STIP scoring sessions, 2 days is almost the limit of what you can do, just sitting there and reading and listening and scoring. It almost becomes an endless process.
Well, I actually sat in on one of the STIP process meetings, and I was totally amazed because of the way it's set up currently is that people can save their points because they give their points for different projects, and they can save their points and say, I'm not going to vote on this one, and I'll vote on another one. I'm going to save my points. And so they can actually save points to do that. And so I was kind of surprised at how it could work. And I saw it happen at one of the decisions that they made. And
if I can clarify, Chair Wilson, that's 4% of the total points that are possible to be saved. It's a subset of the total. It's the other 96 are based upon firm criteria.
So I think it probably would be good if we had some kind of material or something. But that was just a question that I had on what you use now. Now, what are you going to do? If this doesn't pass, are you going to continue using the program you're using, or are you going to try to get something else anyway?
Chair Wilson, I believe there would be rebellion in the ranks of these committees if we tried to do it the slow, tedious way. We would have to find a way to record votes simultaneously, so that's one of the things the Decision Lens does, is allows everyone to score. And on a screen above, you can see how people are scoring, and then it does all the math for you. So it also does something which I think is very important. It lets the committee decide how to weight the questions. Assigning weights is not trivial. As you just sort of alluded to, the weights are very important, and they use what's called an analytical hierarchy process to help the committee determine what the weight should be. It's essentially the collective judgment of the panel, and it's all being done mathematically by that software. So many DOTs now are moving over to this software, as are many other Fortune 500 companies. It's being used for a variety of things. It was, of all things, the software was developed during the Cold War to determine how to respond to our enemy at the time with various political and military and other options they might use. It was to try to assess, you know, do you use force, do you use tactics, do you use... You know, it was developed by the CIA and the State Department.
Very interesting. Good.
Any more questions for Mr. Rosnes? Thanks, sir. Appreciate it. Next up, Department of Administration. Is there anybody here?
That's really
okay. On the next one.
Wait a minute. The Department of Administration is DMV.
DMV, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, DMV is online.
Okay. And Tiffany Thomas.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Colleen Greenshields. I'm the Administrative Officer for the Division of Motor Vehicles. I am substituting in for Tiffany Thomas.
Okay, please.
And I'm happy to answer any questions.
Well, the question is, are you in a position to explain the fiscal note?
Yes, I am. DMV has submitted a fiscal note that notes zero impact on us. We are a receipt-supported department, and the change in this will simply move our funds from general funds into the
ATIF.
Excuse me, yes, into the ATIF fund. We have identified $15,725.8 amount of funds that will not be available to be moved.
And
and
those are funds that are kind of dedicated to something else right now, right?
Yes, they are.
And those are the boat registration fees, the snowmobile registration fees, the mission maintenance fees, the donations collected from the Anatomical Gift Awareness Fund, and fees for special plates and trust and adjustments.
Yes, Madam Chair.
Okay, and those we haven't touched because we want to make sure that they still go into where that in the bill. We've made sure that those items will still continue to go where they're supposed to go, and we'll just take what's left over. So, okay. Thank you.
Any more questions for the lady from DMV? Very good. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
Next up, Department of Commerce, Community Economic Development.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Lorraine Palmer. I'm the Director for the Division of Economic Development. Our division submitted a fiscal note reflecting the impact if we were to develop the fund and how it would change the receipts we currently get from the vehicle rental tax. And right now, the vehicle rental tax funding is helping to support the tourism development activities within the division. And those scope of activities include a variety of efforts to support both workplace development for tourism, research projects, developing niche markets, helping rural Alaska develop tourism opportunities. And currently there are three staff persons who are involved in some level of the tourism development activities. So, and I think our fiscal note explains a little to the degree that, you know, that the tourism development activities are happening within that, within the funding provided through the rental tax.
Questions for the department? Representative Wilson.
Do you have, do you get 100% of that, or do you get half of it? What have you been getting in the past?
The total amount that comes to the division is the $338,700. And I don't know what proportion of the total vehicle rental tax that represents.
I do believe it's 50%.
No.
Oh, that's available from all of that. So it doesn't tell us how much total. Okay. Maybe I can have my chief of staff come forward and explain
Becky Rooney, staff to Representative Wilson. In the previous bills that we've had, we've only asked for 50% of the vehicle rental fees, and this year we asked for 100%. I think it's around $2 million. I don't remember what the total amount is, but they are currently using $338,000 for these tourism activities. And in the vehicle rental tax was initiated, it was to be used for both tourism and for the roads that the vehicles rode on, drive on. So it was for both purposes.
Okay.
I understand.
And
Representative Wilson?
I just so that I would be willing to look at that and put it back at the 50% that we had in the previous bills. We just really forgot about that part when we did the bill, so we can change that.
Okay.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, my I'm thinking of a $9 million is coming to mind for the total vehicle rental tax. Thank you. It just came to me as I was looking at this. So we could take a very small portion of it that's allowed under the current statute to support the tourism development activity. So if that's not replaced through general fund or through the transportation fund, then it would significantly impact our ability to carry out those activities.
Any other questions for the Department of Commerce? Thank you, ma'am. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And let's see. Next up, Department of Commerce and under Community and Regional Affairs. It's a zero fiscal note, so that appears to be it for.
And we had, did we call on the Department of Revenue?
No, I didn't see one for Department of Revenue.
Yeah.
Okay. Did I miss it? Department of Revenue, are you here? Please, come forward.
Presence.
Must have inadvertently slipped over the top of it.
For the record, my name is Pamela Leary. I am the Comptroller in the Treasury Division of Department of Revenue. And we submitted a fiscal note primarily for the management service fees that would be incurred associated with the fund. Now, our assumptions were based on only $1 billion being in the fund, but they are scalable. So depending upon what the dollar amount is, we can adjust what our estimate would be. And I also used additional revenue amounts coming in based on the different forecasts in the revenue forecast book, and we had 8.9, I think, for as what I'm seeing here for the vehicle taxes.
Okay, so your fiscal note is based on the assumption that it's a $1 billion endowment?
Yes.
Okay.
If you were to scale it to $2 billion, it would be virtually double. Management fees are generally based on the size of the fund being invested.
So it actually would double? It wouldn't be?
There would, well, for estimates, We use a certain number. It is only an estimate. It depends on how the fund does and what investments the fund is in.
Okay.
Okay. You might want to fix that since it represents the two bad.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other questions for Department of Revenue? Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
I believe that exhausts fiscal notes.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Johnson.
And there's no Department of Law. And I don't have the fiscal notes on my iPad, so I'm not. There's no Department of Law fiscal note?
No, there isn't.
No, there isn't.
Didn't the Department of Transportation said they needed a substantial amount of money for legal services?
I don't know. We didn't get one from.
Mr. Athens?
I thought I heard him say that in his testimony.
Once they have their in-house lawyers already.
That's what I'm wondering. That's my question.
For the record, Jeff Otteson, Director of Program Development at Department of Transportation. Was the question on the legal fees and the
right
amount that Rep. Johnson?
Do you have your own attorneys or do you use Department of Law?
Well, we are required to use our attorneys. They're well over $125 an hour now. And based upon my experience with regulation drafting, especially the first go at it, you don't have an existing regulation that you're amending. I'm probably light, to be honest, but I was trying to be respectful of the legislation.
So you hire outside attorneys?
No, through the chair, Representative Johnson. No, we hire attorneys in the Department of Law that are assigned. Typically, it's attorneys that are already assigned to our transportation section, but whenever we engage them, even on a simple question on a contract, the meter is on and we get a bill.
And, okay.
Go ahead.
And Madam Chair, that's my point. We need a Department of Law fiscal note that would reflect an interagency transfer, which would possibly reduce the amount of general funds we have to give to the Department of Law.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Addison. All right, at this time, we'll open up public testimony on the bill. Take folks in the room first. First up, Kathy Wasserman.
Good
Is she here? No? How about Don Etheridge?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Don Etheridge, representing the Alaska State AFL-CIO, and we are supportive of the legislation, and I think it's a good time to start building roads somewhere in this state. We haven't built one in probably 30 years since we started building roads in this state, and everybody in this room knows that we definitely have maintenance that needs to be done, and it's not getting done. Harbors and docks and roads, airports, they all need some work done. We need some additional funding source to take care of those. And we're fully supportive of the all three pieces of legislation.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Etheridge. Any questions for Mr. Etheridge? Great. We'll go to the off-net. Dale Nelson from the... let's see, representing the Alaska Professional Design Council. Mr. Nelson, are you there?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. We hear you loud and clear. Please state your name and proceed with your testimony.
Okay. My name is Dale Nelson. I'm with the Alaska Professional Design Council, and I'm chair of the Legislative Liaison Committee. And I'm calling to you from Washington, D.C., we're dealing with some similar transportation things. We just released a report card, and is D for transportation across the United States. So anyway, to this bill, HB 123, the Alaska Professional Design Council, who has memberships of the Alaska Society of Professional Engineers, land surveyors, the Congress of Surveying and Mapping, Institute of Architects, ASC, American Society of Civil Engineers, and the American Council of Engineering Companies. So that just gives you what our membership is made up of. And as I said before, we support that bill, and we'd like to see it move forward. That would be my testimony.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Nelson. Any questions from committee? Appreciate you taking the time. I'll be cutting into your dinner at this point. Thanks, Mr. Nelson.
Well, this is important. Thank you for your concern.
Okay. Is there anyone else in the room that would like to testify? Anybody else online? No. Okay, we will leave public testimony open at this time and discussion on the bill. In that case, we'll take the brief at ease. At this time, what is the will of the committee, Representative?
With committee discussion or anything?
Oh, committee discussion on the bill.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to comment. I think this is long overdue. I think Representative Wilson and I fought this battle now for 6 years, or five at least, and I think it's high time that we do this. I've never seen anything with so much public support get so much resistance. So I am a strong advocate of doing this. We'll see what the $2 billion looks like when it comes down, but this part of this needs to move on and take the next step on its journey to fruition. So I strongly encourage passage of this bill. And with that, if I could have the honor.
Well, I'd like to say something first.
Okay, good enough then.
Having fought the battle for two of those 6 years, I think it's important and incumbent upon the state that we take responsibility for our transportation needs. We're facing all kinds of basically a decline in federal contributions to our transportation network, and this is a prudent exercise to make sure that Alaska's transportation needs are met and continue to be met in our future history. So. This time, I don't see anybody else in the room that would like to testify. We'll close public testimony and go to Representative Gass.
Thank you. Well, coming from one of the fastest growing districts that we're unable to keep up with our roads, I plan on voting for this as well. I think that this is one of the ways that we can speed up the process for those faster growing communities to be able to keep up with the roads. So I thank you very much for coming forth with this bill. Thank you.
Any other comments from the committee? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to move HB 123 out of committee with individual recommendations, attached fiscal notes.
And hearing no objection, the motion carries. The bill's moved out of committee.
Yay!
We'll take a brief it is to sign the paperwork.
Okay, we're back on record, and I would just like to say that we have a meeting on Thursday afternoon, and we will be hearing our Kubota bill. If anybody has any amendments for it, I would hope that they would happen to me by Wednesday night, and we will be hearing that bill on Thursday. And having said that, we will adjourn this meeting.